Please stay tuned for important disclosure information at the conclusion of this episode.
Welcome to Investing Insights. I'm your host, Ivana Hampton. Is the 60-40 portfolio living up to its reputation of resilience this year? The merit of a classic portfolio of 60% stocks and 40% bonds has been a matter of debate in recent years. A diversified 60-40 strategy failed to protect investors in 2022's broad market crash. In fact, an all-stock portfolio would have held up better. However, a historical deep dive from Morningstar concluded that the tried and true approach lessened the pain in almost all of the worst market crashes in 150 years, better than an all-stock portfolio. Joining me is Morningstar Inc. portfolio strategist Amy Arnott to discuss the 60-40 portfolio's ups and downs and its performance in 2025. Thanks for being here, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with an explainer. What is a 60-40 portfolio and why is it so popular?
Well, the 60-40 portfolio is all about balance. So you've got 60% stocks, 40% bonds. It gives you exposure to the two biggest asset classes. And on the stock side, you have equity exposure. So that is going to give you the potential for growth and capital appreciation over time. And on the bond side, you have yield from the bond coupons and also hopefully some downside protection. So with those two things together, you're getting pretty broad market exposure and diversification between stocks and bonds. So it's popular because it's a very simple approach to building a diversified portfolio, and it has also performed pretty well in a variety of market environments.
We often hear claims that the 60-40 portfolio is dead or obsolete. Why does this strategy get so much criticism?
Yeah, well, you know, as I mentioned, it's a very simple strategy, and a lot of people criticize it for being too one size fits all. And especially if you only have U.S. stocks and U.S. bonds, you are leaving out international exposure, which is a big part of the market that you probably do want to have as part of your portfolio. I think another reason it often gets criticized is, you know, they're just like in other parts of life, the investment world has its own fads and fashions. And sometimes the 60-40 portfolio is very simple, but it's not always in style. So it's sort of like, you know, if you're wearing a white t-shirt and Gap jeans, it's very classic, nothing wrong with it, but maybe not the most in fashion type of thing.
I agree. White t-shirt and jeans just fine with me. So some of that criticism flared up in 2022. Why did the 60-40 portfolio perform so badly that year?
Well, it was kind of the perfect storm, you know, because we had a bear market for stocks. Stocks were down about 20%. And then this big spike in interest rates with the Fed hiking interest rates a total of more than 4 percentage points for the year, which was obviously very bad for bonds. So you had double-digit losses on both stocks and bonds, which was not good for the 60-40 portfolio. It was down about 17% for the year, which was a worse performance that it had in a very long time.
Now, volatility has rocked the market in 2025. How has the classic investment strategy done so far this year?
Well, we had a lot of market volatility earlier this year with the tariff announcements toward the beginning of April. There were a couple days of big market losses, you know, a total of 10% down in just 2 days in early April. Since then, the equity market has bounced back. People don't seem too worried about tariffs anymore. And the bond market has done pretty well overall. So as a result, the 60-40 portfolio has done pretty well so far this year. It's up about 8%, not quite as good as stocks, which are up more like 10%, but still pretty good overall.
Are there any asset classes that have performed better in 2025 and why?
Yeah, I would point to two asset classes in particular. Gold has been the best performing major asset class, it's up about 29% so far this year and close to an all-time high. And a couple different things driving that have been central banks around the world trying to diversify their reserves. So instead of just buying US dollars, a lot of central banks have been loading up on gold. And there's also been a lot of macroeconomic uncertainty with tariffs, interest rates, a lot of geopolitical uncertainty. And in an environment like that, gold tends to do pretty well. The other big star has been non-US stocks, which are up about 22% so far this year. And that's also been a really strong reversal from the previous, I would say, 10 or 15 years when international stocks were lagging US stocks by a pretty wide margin. So heading into this year, valuations on international stocks were lower, so they had more room to go up. And they also benefited from currency tailwinds as the dollar has been declining. And another reason international stocks have done well is they tend to have different sector profile versus the US. So if technology stocks, for example, are under pressure, international stocks, which tend to have more exposure to things like industrials, financials, cyclicals, tend to do better.
And which asset classes have struggled?
Well, most major asset classes have had positive returns so far this year. I would say long-term bonds haven't been a great place to be because there has been some uncertainty about future interest rates, and as well as the impact of the rising national debt level and what that means for treasury bonds. And real estate has also been kind of lackluster. It's been the Morningstar REIT index has been roughly flat so far this year. So we've still seen some weakness in office REITs in the wake of the pandemic. And it just hasn't been able to keep pace with other areas like artificial intelligence and other technology related stocks.
Now, interest rates are sitting at above 4%, but market watchers are expecting the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates in September. What could that mean for the fixed income part of the 60/40 portfolio?
It should be a good thing. You know, there's this inverse relationship between interest rates and bond prices. So if you have the Federal Reserve cutting rates, you would normally expect to see bond prices going up.
And how do you think the 60/40 portfolio will perform in the next few years?
I wish I knew. I don't have any way to predict perfectly, but I would say on the bond side, if you look at, you know, as you mentioned, yields right now are around 4% or a little above 4%. And that is generally a pretty good indication of what you can expect for future returns for bonds. So I would say the outlook for on the bond side is pretty positive. The equity side is a little bit less certain. We do still have very high valuations on stocks and especially on U.S. stocks. So potentially that could weigh down that 60% equity portion of the 60/40 portfolio.
Should people still rely on the 60/40 portfolio before you answer that, because I have a follow-up, or is another strategy better like the 70/30 or the 50/30/20, which could be a mix of stocks, bonds, and alternatives?
Well, I think when you're thinking about an asset allocation, you should always go back to your time horizon. And that's really should be the deciding factor of what you want your asset allocation to look like. As I mentioned earlier, the 60/40 isn't necessarily the best portfolio for everyone. If you're a young investor just starting out in your career, you're looking ahead, you know, 30 or 40 years before retirement, you probably want to be a lot heavier on the equity side, maybe even 90 or 100% stocks if you have a a pretty high risk tolerance. And on the flip side, if you are getting close to retirement or already in retirement, you probably want to have less equity exposure and more fixed income exposure. So maybe something like a 50-50 portfolio or even 40-60. And in terms of the 50-30-20 portfolio, this is something that we've seen asset management companies like BlackRock promoting pretty aggressively. And the idea, as you mentioned, is you would have to 50% stocks, 30% bonds, potentially 20% in alternatives, including private equity and private capital. So, you know, the asset management firms who are promoting this idea, they have a lot of research and white papers that they've published. They believe that you can get better risk-adjusted returns by adding that 20% allocation. That may happen or it may not. And I would just take that recommendation with a few grains of salt. Obviously, if a firm is offering exposure to alternative assets or private capital, they have a vested interest in promoting those asset classes. So they're going to be able to make more money if people do go ahead with that 20% allocation. And another thing to keep in mind is that the expenses are much, much higher on those alternative asset classes. So potentially you're getting better risk-adjusted returns, but at the same time, you are definitely paying higher fees. So something to keep in mind there.
Definitely. Well, the tried and true strategy has proved its worth. So what's the final takeaway for current retirees, future retirees like myself, or anyone seeking less risk?
I would say, you know, the 60-40 portfolio, even though a lot of people love to criticize it, it's not always in fashion. I think it's an excellent starting point for building a diversified portfolio. And, you know, if you're a younger investor, you probably want to have more equity exposure. You're retired, probably a bit less. And another key point I would make is that if you do decide to go ahead with a 60-40 allocation, you should definitely make sure to have some international exposure as part of that equity position. So as I mentioned, valuations on U.S. stocks are pretty high. And I think international diversification still makes a lot of sense and helps build a diversified portfolio that's giving you exposure to most major asset classes.
Well, Amy, thank you for coming to the table and discussing why the 60-40 portfolio has staying power.
Great. Thanks for having me.
That wraps up this week's episode. Thanks for making this show part of your day. A couple of reminders. Give Investing Insights 5 stars on Apple Podcasts to help others find the work we're producing for you, and subscribe to Morningstar's YouTube channel to watch new videos from our team. Thanks to senior video producer Jake Van Kersen and associate multimedia editor Jessica Bebel. I'm Ivana Hampton, lead multimedia editor of Morningstar. Take care.
This recording is for informational purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. Opinions expressed are as of the date of recording and are subject to change without notice. The views and opinions of guests on this program are not necessarily those of Morningstar Inc. and its affiliates, which together we refer to as Morningstar. Morningstar is not affiliated with guests or their business affiliates unless otherwise stated. Morningstar does not guarantee the accuracy or the completeness of the data presented herein. This recording is for informational purposes only, and the information, data, analysis, or opinion it includes or their use should not be considered investment or tax advice, and therefore is not an offer to buy or sell a security. Morningstar shall not be responsible for any trading decisions, damages, or other losses resulting from or related to the information, data, analyses, or opinions or their use. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments are subject to investment risk, including possible loss of principal. Individuals should seriously consider if an investment is suitable for them by referencing their own financial position, investment objectives, and risk profile before making any investment decision. Please consult a tax and/or financial professional for advice specific to your individual circumstances.